Welcome back. We're going to get started. I'm Victoria Maloney. I'm the membership chair for the SDPA. And for those of you that are new into the ballroom, I'm going to be introducing Dr. Markowitz, who is a leading dermatologist, skin cancer specialist, and CEO and founder of Markowitz Medical. She has been called a dermatologic pioneer for her groundbreaking work developing minimally invasive diagnostic and treatment protocols for skin cancer. Her motto, cutting edge without the cutting. Thank
you. Okay. And of course, I left my clicker again on the table. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to be discussing my favorite topic in dermoscopy, which is advanced dermoscopy. And here, when I think of advanced, I actually bring it back to advanced doesn't mean difficult. It just means we want to catch early malignancies. And my, you know, I wrote the color wheel approach to dermoscopy. The purpose for me initially was the importance of colors in diagnosing early amelanotic melanoma. And as I realized, as I sort of continued to force myself to write this textbook many years ago at this point, I started to realize that there's a lot of similarity in terms of looking at colors when you're trying to catch things early. And the earlier we catch something, the better it is for everyone and the easier it is to manage. So when we're thinking about a color wheel approach to dermoscopy, and for those of you that this is the third lecture that you're at, some of this will look familiar, which is good. We look not only at what we see dermoscopically, but very importantly, what we see clinically. Is this something that's flat? Is it something that's elevated? And then if it's flat or elevated, what color is it clinically? And then what color is it dermoscopically? And I would say that just those three pieces of information alone help me diagnose majority of early lesions. And then I'll use pattern to just reassure me and sometimes to help me diagnose when it's really, really early and I'm just looking for really simple asymmetry or just some basic, like it doesn't really fit patterns I'm familiar with. And then of course, with dermoscopy, just to reiterate, there's contact, non-contact, polarized, non-polarized. And today you have the option for multiple companies to get all of these features within your dermatoscope. And this is similar to what I showed in my intro talk, which is the beauty of dermoscopy is being able to differentiate very subtle early lesions. The top lesion is our dot globular arborized, what is a basal cell, and the bottom lesion are these yellow or white globule structures surrounded by blanching or crowning or serpiginous vessels, and that's benign. And then we can use additional imaging tools, and in this case, I'm showing you an example of optical coherence tomography, and we look at what this lesion looks like under the skin that mimics what we see on histology. So in my practice often, at least for basal cell, I give the patient the option to never be cut from start to finish. That means I'm not cutting them to biopsy them, I'm not even cutting them to treat them. They're walking home without a Band-Aid. And that's what non-invasive imaging has enabled me to sort of provide within my practice. So when we have, for example, a flat lesion that's pale brown in color, and then only brown on dermoscopy, that actually can be almost everything. So we think, oh, it's just pale brown and there's only one color on dermoscopy, how can that be malignant? In fact, every malignancy, when it's really, really early, can be in this color scheme. And so that's when I actually will use pattern and I will look at overall asymmetry. So the top left is an early pigmented squamous cell where you see this kind of smudgy pattern, and you also see these burgundy brown globules, because those are the vessels of pigmented Bowens. With the melanoma, you're seeing streaking or darkening at the edge of a lesion. And with the lentigo and a junctional nevus, guess what? The edges look just fine. And junctional nevi are going to look like a nice, healthy fishnet. And our lentigo is going to have moth-eaten border and be pretty uniform. Now, what about, you know, people, is it a melanoma? Is it a basal cell? When these lesions are really early, even melanoma, you don't have to go by, you know, back in the day, they say you pinch the skin and you take an 11 blade and you chop it off. Like, no, I'm going to do a shave biopsy with these really small early lesions. And sometimes I can't tell if I'm looking at an early basal cell or I'm looking at an early melanoma. And I'm a lumper, so it's, am I biopsying, yes or no? And if it's a basal, if it's a melanoma, when it's really, really early, yes, I'd like to think that I always know and can differentiate one from the other, but how important is it? Not with an early lesion, because you can do a shave biopsy and you're gonna get that whole lesion. And earlier someone had asked a very important question, like, what do you do with this patient that walks in and comes in with all these classic atypical moles? And if you have greater than 6 that are atypical and greater than 6 millimeters in diameter, then you have the diagnosis of classic atypical mole syndrome. What do you do with this patient if he also happens to be the husband of a dermatologist that you're in the process of training? You don't panic. And what you look for is the mole that doesn't belong, the lesion that doesn't belong, or what's called the ugly duckling. And the ugly duckling doesn't necessarily mean that it's the darkest lesion or it's the most atypical lesion. It's just simply the lesion that doesn't belong. And in this patient, that's the lesion that didn't belong. And that's what he ended up getting biopsied on his first skin exam. And it's not a very interesting lesion clinically, so clearly I'm a fan of dermoscopy when people say, you know, how important is dermoscopy. And then the other thing that I often get asked is, well, you don't look at things, you don't look at everything dermoscopically, you wouldn't have time. Obviously in New York City, they're absolutely right, you wouldn't, but yes, you would, because if you're just used to looking and you're looking quickly, you're not going to biopsy all his large atypical moles, you're gonna biopsy his melanoma. And that's the melanoma. So you see that it's streaking at the edge, that it's darker at the periphery, that there's almost like these pseudopods and radial streaming, and overall that it's quite asymmetric. And so this was his point, I think 3.7 or 0.4 millimeter melanoma. And none of his large atypical moles, and of course now I'm taking care of him over a decade, have ever been biopsied because they're not melanoma. And that's what you see, and of course non-uniform. And yet 0.4 millimeter thick melanoma. Now, recently, this month, the U.S. Preventative Task Force deemed skin exams that there's insufficient evidence. So even November 2022, low-risk patients, we're not sure need skin exams. But if you look at these examples, that's a low-risk patient. And that was a 0.4 millimeter thick, relatively small lesion on his leg. So how long would we have waited, and when would that have been biopsied? And his poor wife, who's a dermatologist, like, when would she have noticed that small, what looks like, in my opinion, a freckle clinically on the leg? And so that's why it's so important that as we are, as a specialty, making the rest of the universe realize how important it is, that what we do in saving lives, that there is sufficient evidence as long as we're using the tools that we have and we know how to use them. And of course, it's always important to remember that these are the types of patients that are dying from, in her example, a melanoma on the leg, a young, beautiful, you know, 20-year-old girl, or woman, but 20. So that's very young. And people pass away. As a matter of fact, the statistic is that the number one cause of cancer death for patients in their 20s is skin cancer. So we need to diagnose and we need to examine. And so then I use some examples of early melanomas, right? So this is a very small melanoma in situ. And without dermoscopy, you're not going to biopsy that lesion. But then when you look at it dermoscopically, yes, if it's a healthy, benign, growing mole, you're going to see very symmetric peripheral dots all around the lesion. This is not symmetric. These dots are kind of everywhere. And the pattern is very non-pattern. It's not really homogeneous. It's not really reticular. It's not kind of dot globular, not really. That's a melanoma. That should not be left on the patient. And you could see I did a very thin biopsy. Why? Because it's like a millimeter-sized lesion. I don't need to go crazy to get a diagnosis. Here's a young female dermatologist that came to see me for a skin exam. She figured, let me just not be the one looking at my own skin, which reminds us we should have people that we trust doing our exams. And she also has a lot of moles, which is probably why she wanted a second set of eyes. And this is the lesion of concern. Obviously, clinically not so interesting. Dermoscopically, there's like black dots. There's this I don't even know what pattern you would call. Would you call this dot globular? I mean, that doesn't really fit a pattern. It's very asymmetric. There's like one portion that looks kind of like just pigment, and the other portion are these dark dots on this thick line. So yes, very small lesion, very much a melanoma, and still stage zero, like small early melanoma. So what about amelanotic melanoma? I already did show some examples because I think it's such an important topic, but it isn't technically also an early lesion and an advanced. Like, you want to make sure you can diagnose these early. Why? Because they're the most aggressive, and they're the majority of deaths are from amelanotic melanoma, even though it's more rare, because it's hard to catch it early. So when do you want to catch it? When it's not elevated, right? Because by the time an amelanotic melanoma is elevated, it's quite advanced. So we want to catch it when it's flat and pink, and it has a bunch of colors. And guess what? We've got a lot of other things that look like this. So it's not so straightforward. And, you know, yes, it's less likely to be palpable like a dermatofibroma. It's not going to be a congenital nevus, but some are, and I use these examples because they are confusing. Most congenital nevi hopefully aren't that confusing with amelanotic. Lichen planus like keratosis can be quite confusing. And is it so critical that we know whether it's a superficial basal or an amelanotic melanoma? We definitely are going to biopsy. Like, as long as we're biopsying it, we're good, right? We just don't want to leave it behind. Pattern definitely matters here, right? So here's an example. Now, granted, clinically, the dermatofibroma probably very different than the amelanotic melanoma, because the dermatofibroma is going to be palpable, and the amelanotic melanoma, when it's this early stage, is not. So you are comparing apples and oranges, but it's also helpful to look at the dermoscopy just to understand that something that's benign with a pseudo-network pattern at the periphery looks so healthy compared to this amelanotic melanoma that has like this random pigment and dotted vessels. And so it just helps us remember what we're looking at when we're trying to diagnose things that are quite deadly to our patient if we miss it. And so again, if you even look further up close, look how much more asymmetric this very subtle early amelanotic melanoma is compared to a dermatofibroma. Here's another example of where pattern is helpful. And I use these examples on purpose because I think that this is a very challenging congenital nevus. And again, these actually look quite similar clinically. I don't think they're very different, but I'm going to argue that dermoscopically, they're quite different. So one is an amelanotic melanoma, and the other is a congenital nevus. But when we focus on the periphery of the congenital nevus compared to the amelanotic melanoma, look how much more irregular the amelanotic melanoma is. Forget about the fact that it has polymorphous vessels. It's now starting to see, I'm even seeing like a crystalline-like pattern. So I know there's even an early dermal component to this lesion, even though the lesion was so early. But if you look at the congenital nevus, look how beautiful and symmetric it is. So that's why the pattern of the periphery of a lesion matters a lot when you're looking at very early, subtle lesions, like an early amelanotic melanoma. And this is just an article that, among many articles, that talks about how these are definitely more advanced at the time of diagnosis and that they grow faster and they're going to be more aggressive because they're so much harder to catch at that early stage. And that's why it's so important to think about colors and to look at the periphery of lesions, to use dermoscopy for sure, and also to make sure that you're paying attention to the overall symmetry. So here's a classic atypical mole syndrome patient, and this is the lesion of concern. This is a different patient, another 0.3 millimeter thick melanoma. And you can see there's like almost like a negative network, really random pigment, and then these like dotted vessels that don't belong. So if I'm looking at something that's a pink macule and all of a sudden I'm seeing pigment and other things, that's a huge red flag. Get it off. And it's still 0.3 millimeters thick because these are aggressive lesions and we don't want to catch them late in the game. Here again, three examples clinically, and this is what we see dermoscopically, and we start to see a very familiar pattern in the sense that they're very asymmetric. The vessels are not quite uniform, and the pigment is sort of all over the place. And these are really early lesions. So if you're feeling confident looking at this, you're saving a lot of lives. And so that's the up close of that amelanotic melanoma. And you can see that there's even, you know, some components like besides the polymorphous vessels, but that crystalline pattern. So there's almost like a little bit of a dermal component to it already, but it's still a very early lesion. This is a patient that is covered in squamous cells and AKs. She's on cerioptine, very complicated patient, constantly managing through field cancerization, and then she shows up with this lesion. So easy to miss on a patient covered in skin cancers, except when you look up close, you're seeing pigment next to what almost looks like with her, everything is going to be scaly and actinic looking. So here, maybe not so much the polymorphous vessels as like pink and crusty, but where did this brown come from? And you have to be careful. And in her case, it's not amelanotic, it's hypomelanotic, because you could even see clinically that there was pink and brown together. And pink and brown is no good. So hypomelanotic. What about lesions that are elevated pink and red? So these are going to be, you know, mainly benign, but you'll also see advanced like squamous cell, basal cell, but more importantly, that's our advanced amelanotic melanomas. These lesions are going to be a clinical, even without the dermoscopy diagnosis, because no amelanotic by the time it's elevated is going to look okay. And maybe you're not going to be able to differentiate it from a squamous cell, but you know you're going to biopsy that lesion, and that's a good idea to do that. Yes, Spitz nevi fall under that category as well, dermatofibromas, intradermal nevi. So let's take a look. at some examples. So here is a squamous compared to an amelanotic melanoma that's advanced. Yes, with hindsight, those are polymorphous vessels as opposed to glomeruloid or dotted vessels, but clinically, both of these are elevated pink. The amelanotic melanoma looks much more concerning clinically to me, but nonetheless, both are going to get biopsied, and not always is it going to be so obvious. You just know that they are skin cancer, and you're going to biopsy them. Here's an example of a Spitz nevus, let's say, compared to a dermatofibroma. I mean, a Spitz nevus like this is usually going to be on a younger individual. It's not going to be palpable, but it's important to remember that Spitz nevi can look like this, and that you also have to think about the age of the patient and the clinical history. You never look at something just dermoscopically. You always take it in the clinical context. And then our great masquerader is our lichen planus like keratosis. So when lesions are inflamed, sometimes it's a little tricky to differentiate them from malignancy. And so often, as I'm saying quite a bit, these are lesions that are often irritating my patients, hence not just inflamed, but irritated, seborrheic keratosis, or irritating. And we do end up biopsying them for that reason. But in this case, you see these halos around vessels and crusting, and you do see the features of a seborrheic keratosis. I'd say about 50% of mine have actinic keratosis in them anyway. That's why they're so irritated or inflamed or bleeding. So I'm happy to biopsy them, but it is important to know what you're looking at so that when you have a differential, at least you're saying, well, this could be an ISK, SCC. You know, you want to have an idea of what ISKs can look like, and that they do have these like hairpin vessels surrounded by a halo, because they're technically proliferating benign growths. And when they get very irritated, they could be something not so benign in them. And then just to go over some of the features of basal cell, we spoke about pigmented basal, but non-pigmented basal can have many of these features as well, and it's starting off as like a pink lesion, pink, white, shiny, ulceration, arborization, blue, gray, ovoid nest. You see that a lot in non-pigmented basal cells, as well as the crystalline pattern. So here's a patient where I think clinically one could think maybe sebaceous hyperplasia, but then when you look dermoscopically, it's so clear. Look how thin and sharp these vessels are. So when we say arborized vessels, we don't just mean because they look like tree branches. We also mean that they're really sharp, very thin vessels, because this is neovascularization of a tumor. And then around it is the telangiectasias of his normal skin, those plump vessels. So they look very different when it's a basal cell and it's arborized, not inflamed. And then another example, you know, sometimes people get confused because they're like, well, these are mostly inflammatory, and what's this thing in the middle? You know, here's some inflamed vessels. But then look, there are arborized vessels, and then there's this like weird collection over here, like what's that? Well, yeah, sometimes basal cells hemorrhage, but that's not how we're diagnosing it. So we can't, you know, don't necessarily get confused. And you can see in the pathology, this one bled a little. Okay, that happens. Here's another example of an early basal cell, and you can see again the very thin, sharp, arborized vessels. So burn that in your heads to see these are what arborized vessels look like. Yes, there's also ulceration. With basal cells, it's focal ulceration, arborized vessels. And then the crystalline pattern is a little bit different. It's like more clotted crystalline pattern, but still crystalline pattern you can see in basal cells, not just benign dermatofibromas. And this to me looks more like sebaceous hyperplasia. Clinically, it almost has like a central Del but nothing like sebaceous hyperplasia dermoscopically, right? Because you see these very thin, sharp, arborized vessels, so basal cell. Again, thin, sharp, arborized vessel, crystalline pattern, basal cell. Again, thin, sharp, arborized vessels, basal cell. Very important because these are all really early lesions, and then when you're confident catching these, the rest is a walk in the park. Here you see pink, white, shiny, maybe a little bit of crystalline pattern, some arborized vessels. Again, pink, white, shiny, also basal cell. Maybe not as early, that's why you have that pink, white, shiny. So it's a little like much more of a clinical as well. And then just back to, yes, we also have pigmented basal. Sometimes it's a little pink clinically, so can you really call it a pigmented? But you see the same features. You see the ash leaves and the arborization. And here you can even appreciate the blue ovoid nest and the arborized vessels. And here again, so you're bringing in some of the blue ovoid or this little granularity next to the arborized vessels. And here, arborized vessel and that sort of pink background basal. Always, when in doubt, take it out. So if you're dealing with something pink that's elevated and you think it could be nodular, you know, amelanotic melanoma, of course, you're going to biopsy it. But what do we have here? So we have, let's go, we're going to move away from elevated back to flat. And so at least we're not dealing with anything aggressive like a nodular amelanotic melanoma. But we're looking at porokeratosis, superficial squamous cell, superficial basal cell. Benign is clear cell acanthoma, but I do end up biopsying these. And I even tell the pathologist I think it's a clear cell simply because am I really convinced it's, you know, this sort of string of pearls, not always. And then lichen planus-like keratosis, which are the irritated lesions, which sometimes will have actinics in them. So really, the majority of these should be biopsied. How about that? And if we compare, again, the pattern of a basal cell to a lichen planus-like keratosis, they do look different because something that's inflamed looks really inflamed dermoscopically as well and doesn't fit anything other than inflammation, but if you're not sure, you're going to biopsy, whereas the basal cell actually has more of a pattern. You see that it's pink, white, shiny, and you see arborized vessels, and that's more consistent with the skin cancer. And now if we go to elevated in pink and multi, lots of colors, then of course we're going to have more advanced malignancy here as well. And we're going to have more benign things to think about. So malignant versus benign. Let's take a look. This is an example. I don't know if some of you were in the intro to dermoscopy talk, but someone asked about how can you differentiate sebaceous hyperplasia from other malignancies that might look similar. In my 20 years of practicing and taking images dermoscopically, this is the one case that I found where I was like, oh my God, this basal cell almost looks like sebaceous hyperplasia, but still you see a blue ovoid nest and look at the difference. The sebaceous hyperplasia, the vessels are crowning around, it's these white lobular structures, very uniform, and the basal cell is all over the place, the vessels are kind of crossing the midline, and you see a blue ovoid nest or gray ovoid nest. And so the basal still looks like a basal. I also use this example because how often do I see yellow sebkes? Not that often, but I thought it was nice to compare it to what does a squamous cell look like. And you can see ulceration and vessels compared to just a yellow stuck on, you know, some sebkes can be yellow in color. So that's benign. This is a nice example because clinically, I feel like the intradermal nevus looks much more concerning than the basal cell. But when you look dermoscopically, that person was ripping his intradermal nevus, probably manipulating it, scratching it, and all you see is inflammation. And with the basal cell, it's actually the pattern is much clearer because you see arborized vessels and you see focal yellow ulceration, very classic for basal cell. And this was classic for nothing, but it's so inflamed clinically, you realize, oh, this is probably somebody picking at their intradermal nevus. So with elevated lesions that are sort of clear or pink and yellow, that's mainly going to be our sebaceous hyperplasias or our miliar acne, and it's not really going to fall in the category of malignant. These are benign. And so just to hone in on the point, when you're seeing vessels that might look arborized, especially on the face sometimes, it's a little hard to tell, but then the whole background is yellow, that's benign. That can happen with inflammation or with acne. And the basal cell, the ulceration is very focal, and the lesion is also going to look like an actual lesion and not just, you know, you're just looking at the background of a nose. And that's why it's really important that you never do dermoscopy without what are we seeing clinically, because you'll start to confuse yourself. Flat, pale brown, lots of colors. Usually people think flat and pale brown, that's got to be pretty benign. But actually, there are a ton of malignancies if you're catching things really early that are flat and pale brown. So you've got melanoma in that category, you've got pigmented basal, and you've got pigmented squamous cells that can also be pretty flat and pretty nondescript and not very interesting. And then, of course, many benign lesions are going to be flat and pale brown and have colors on dermoscopy. So how do we differentiate the most complicated lesions? It's not always so easy to differentiate a malignant melanoma from lichen planus-like keratosis, but one does look like the regression pattern is a little bit like thinner granules. And then the lichen planus-like keratosis will also have features of benign growths, but sometimes it's hard to tell. But remember, your lichen planus-like keratosis, when it looks like this, this is going to be like an elevated lesion. It's going to have a lot of substance clinically, and your superficial spreading melanoma, because we're not looking at a nodular melanoma here, that's going to be pretty flat. So in essence, you're almost comparing apples and oranges. But if you're not sure, of course you're going to remove it because a malignant feature and you're worried about melanoma, you're going to take it off. And that's the clinical example of the melanoma, and that's the fine granular pattern and asymmetric network of that early melanoma. And like I said, sometimes in a way you have to think about what you're seeing clinically. Here's this like really inflamed, really interesting clinical and elevated compared to a superficial spreading melanoma, and you're thinking, well, this is an elevated lesion, and I'm not really looking at a nodular melanoma here, and that helps you realize that you're probably looking at something that's inflamed, like a lichen planus-like keratosis. But often if you're not sure and it's inflamed and you see regression, you get kind of nervous and the patient often doesn't like it, that's why it's inflamed, and so it's okay to biopsy. Flat, brown, lots of colors. Certainly darker brown is also going to have a bunch of malignancies and also benign. And if the color is mainly blue, then we're back to, you know, pigmented basal or blue nevus. And so again, just a reminder that our blue nevus is going to look quite different than our pigmented basal. We looked at this in skin of color because I see a lot of pigmented basals in darker skin tones, and you have those blue ovoid nest arborized vessels compared to a homogeneous blue. I love when pattern doesn't matter because that makes it even easier. So if something is pale and elevated and only one color, it's really impossible for it to be malignant, so it's benign. But when you look at it, most of those lesions, because it's only one color and it's pale and elevated, they also look so beautiful and symmetric, and they're pretty straightforward. So it's always nice to have straightforward things too. And when something is elevated and pale and has lots of colors, it's elevated. So remember, pale and elevated, it's still going to be benign because you're not going to be dealing with an aggressive nodular melanoma that's like pale brown and elevated. So that's nice to remember, because often people get confused. Oh, look at this, and it's so interesting, and it's got, and you're like, yeah, but it's, look at it clinically. It looks like nothing. It's just pale and brown, and it's elevated. It can't be a nodular melanoma. When it's dark, that's when we go back to, okay, it's elevated, and it's really dark, and it's got lots of colors. Of course, then it could be malignancy. No, not if it's only brown. Sorry, I'm looking up top thinking it's multicolored. If it's if it's dark brown and elevated and only one color brown, then that's not cancer. That's benign, because it's not going to be an aggressive skin cancer either. And then when pattern matters is when it's elevated brown and has lots of colors. That's when it matters, right? Because that could be aggressive skin cancer, basal cell, late stage melanoma, or even early stage, in some cases, melanoma, versus like a blue nevus or a sebk or LPLK. And this is that example of what I would say is early stage in a young individual, hence why it still bothers me that we're not getting the buy-in of the US Preventative Task Force, because here's a low risk, young patient, skin type 3-4 with this lesion, 1 month duration, right? 0.37 millimeter thick melanoma, blue-white veil, so it's already starting to kind of have some substance, because only superficial melanomas have regression. And when we start to see blue-white veil, that means that's a melanoma that has substance. And then you can also notice this like dark streaking around the periphery, and so of course that's a melanoma. And then flat, dark brown, lots of colors, also can be malignancy, but at least it's flat, so we're dealing with superficial melanoma or basal cell. And here's again the example of the pigmented basal, where we see arborized vessels and a gray or brown ovoid nest. And again, that pattern to differentiate the basal from a blue nevus. So basal looks quite different, blue nevus homogeneous. And then some people might look and say, well, that doesn't look that homogeneous. Yeah, it's on somebody's face, so there's some follicular openings, so it's not going to be perfectly symmetrically blue, but you don't see arborized vessels, you don't see an ovoid nest, so it's still a blue nevus. And here's a small pigmented basal cell with those globular-like structures, so very, very early. And here's another globular-like structures where you see in very early basal cells. But again, if you're not sure and you're like, I'm not sure about these globules, yeah, look at the lesion. It's very asymmetric. So even if you can't 100% diagnose this is an early basal, you know this is a lesion that you're going to biopsy, and then it's going to come back as an early basal. And then here's an example of those ovoid nests, arborized vessel, early basal cell. And the comparison of these two lesions, which look very similar clinically, this one has more crystalline structures, brown-blue ovoid nest, globular-like structures, so that's more consistent with basal cell, and the other lesion has more that fine granularity, asymmetric pattern, which is more consistent with early melanoma. But you know both of them, based on the dermoscopy, not clinically, are going to end up being biopsied because they both are very asymmetric and don't fit anything that looks benign. Now, what about things that are elevated but only red in color and clear or pink? And that, again, is our squamous cell, could also be some basal cells, and then our benign growths as well. And then, of course, the advanced amelanotic melanoma, which we really don't want to catch when it's advanced. So here's the lesion, and I find this one to be a really good lesion because it has kind of features of multiple things, and it is multiple. It's a basosquamous. So it's got the white hyperreflective scale that we see often in AKs or squamous cells. It's got some ulceration, and then it's got these like arborized vessels. So maybe I'm gonna send in a differential of squamous or basal, or maybe I'm just gonna call it basal, or maybe I'm just gonna call it squamous, but it's basal squamous, so it's okay. We don't often see them crossed over like that, but then when you look back with hindsight, it's obvious. And then with squamous cell early, you get the white hyperreflective scale, ulceration, pink, white, shiny area. And then from a vascular perspective, it's, if it's more elevated, you get these keratinizing vessels, similar to what you see in a SEB-K, so not always so obvious. But with a squamous cell, they're technically supposed to be around the periphery, like with a keratoacanthoma. And then you also see diffuse dotted vessels or what look like glomeruloid vessels, but you can see that sometimes with SEB-Ks too. So vascularity, not always the only thing to look at, but sometimes if you only see diffuse glomeruloid vessels, you're gonna wanna biopsy that lesion. So here's an example of an early squamous cell on a patient, and you can see those diffuse glomeruloid vessels. And nothing that would make you think seborrheic keratosis or lichen planus-like keratosis. So you're gonna biopsy that lesion because either it's an actinic or a squamous cell, and it's kind of too palpable and juicy for you to leave it behind or freeze it, in my opinion. So this is a squamous. Here, another kind of flat pink, and could be inflammation, could be psoriasiform, but look at all these vessels. That's all you see. So that's more in line with early squamous cell. Here's a scalp with a lesion that also has now ulceration, so you better think that that's concerning, right? Because it's not just white hyperreflective scale, but there's also ulceration and glomeruloid vessels. And as mentioned, sometimes it's hard to differentiate malignant versus malignant, but polymorphous vessels, diffuse dotted vessels, these are clinically gonna go, this is malignant. And we looked at this example too, the Spitz versus the dermatofibroma, and we have to take into account clinical history. Yeah. I feel like we already reviewed these slides, and I don't know why we're looking at them again, so I apologize. Although repetition is always a good thing in dermoscopy. This one we haven't looked at. So we have in one side for the squamous cell, the ulceration and the dotted vessels, and on the other side for the lichen planus-like keratosis, maybe we can see like fingerprint pattern and moth-eaten border, but often we're gonna biopsy lichen planus-like keratoses. And then we did look at the difference between, say, the periphery of a dermatofibroma, which is nice and uniform, compared to an amelanotic melanoma. I think there's some repetition there, so I apologize. Okay, now keratoacanthoma. I feel like this is often a clinical diagnosis. The patient comes in, they said, I didn't have this lesion, now it's all of a sudden here, and you look at it, and it's rather large, but I love that my European colleagues went ahead and wanted to look at all the features of KA on dermoscopy. And so there are really specific features to KA when it's not so obvious. And so here you see these features, which are the white circles, the blood spots, and the keratin. And so if you're not sure, this is actually pretty highly specific for keratoacanthoma. And so sometimes even the dermatopathologist gets a little confused with keratoacanthoma. So in this patient's case, they were confused. And then the lesion grew back so quickly and it became pretty obvious that it was a keratoacanthoma. And then with hindsight, you look at the original lesion and you say, oh, it had all the features of a KA. So maybe I shouldn't have trusted the dermatopathology or at least given the patient a heads up that this may regrow. And it did very quickly because that's what keratoacanthomas do. And again, the regrown lesion has all the features that the original lesion had. And so with that diagnosis, they did get choroidal acanthoma. So here are some not so different looking lesions, but just to remember the beauty of patterns. Here's what we see on these lesions dermoscopically. So we have our diffuse dotted vessels for our squamous cell, a more of a linear string of pearls for clear cell acanthoma. We see hairpin in our proliferating tumors, which, you know, if we see things that look like fingerprint, maybe we're dealing with a lichen planus like keratosis, and our amelanotic melanoma has the dotted vessels with that faint asymmetric network. And so Bowen's, clear cell acanthoma, SEBK, amelanotic melanoma, 0.3 or 4 millimeters thick. And then the last thing to review is what if you see multiple colors clinically? Well, often that is an indication that something is malignant, but it also could be a collision of things. And I think clinically we can kind of tell what's colliding here, but it's nice to see it dermoscopically too. So what's colliding? An angioma, right? We see the lacuna next to a very benign appearing pigmented lesion that doesn't have really any asymmetry and only one color. So two benign things colliding. Okay, great. But then let's talk about just the benign one on the side, which is, right, the angioma and the beautiful lacuna, because it's important to remember. And then the other benign one, which is pale and brown and elevated, and we decided that that's got to be pretty much, you know, benign anyway, right? Because it's only one color, brown, and it's elevated and it's pale, and so that can't be an aggressive malignancy. And so that's what we have here. What about this lesion? Well, that looks like a pretty advanced basal cell. So blue ovoid nest and arborized vessels. And so and what about this lesion? So to me, this is even more clinically obvious, but what was confusing about this lesion is this was a patient that I was taking care of, and I had actually monitored this mole. So she developed in what was a benign congenital nevus, a melanoma. So that's where, you know, sometimes you get a little thrown off. But look at the dermoscopy of this lesion. There's no way that I'm going to want to short-term mole monitor this. Why? Because it has all the features now of melanoma. But when you're managing a patient and you know you've seen that congenital nevus before, it throws you off when suddenly you see all the features of what's a melanoma and that it even looks kind of advanced at that point. But we know that congenital nevi can, I mean, melanomas know no boundaries. Yes, they're usually going to be new moles, but sometimes they pop up in a congenital nevus. And if it's too clinically obvious, you're going to need to biopsy it. And when her melanoma, which was in situ, started to develop in this congenital nevus, it already looked clinically obvious. And this is the basal cell example. And here's another, I think, pretty clinically obvious basal cell, but yes, it has all the features dermoscopically. And then we start to see things that resemble each other, and, you know, especially with advanced lesions, these ash leaf. And then, as we mentioned, the hypomelanotic melanoma with two colors even clinically, right, pink and brown, so that's concerning. And then finally, not everything is so obvious on dermoscopy. So here we have a lesion that, to me, looked like ash leaf, had sort of the features of an early basal cell, but was an intradermal nevus. So not everything is perfect, but it's nice to have additional imaging tools, because on those tools, that's not a basal cell. That actually looked like an intradermal nevus. So it's the more we use tools, the better we get at diagnosing, and the earlier we catch things, but nothing is gonna be perfect. And that's it. So I'll take any questions.
Uh, We had a few questions that came over through the app, so I'm going to go through the list. What percent of your patients do you detect an early melanoma?
I would say the majority of the melanomas I've detected over the years have been early. Once in a blue, you get a patient, you know, that comes in because they found their lesion of concern, and then that could certainly be advanced. I had one patient who had just had a skin exam by their primary care provider that ended up with a, not advanced, but more advanced melanoma on the scalp that confused the primary care. So you do get that, but from my practice, 99% are less than a millimeter in thickness.
When you see a lesion which you are suspicious of melanoma, are you doing a shape biopsy or are you excising it? If excising, do you schedule the patient for an excision on the spot? This person was just curious about time management in this scenario.
That's a good question. So with these very early lesions, sometimes it's even difficult to be 100% that it's a melanoma. Obviously, if it's a more advanced lesion, then you're going to take, you can excise it if you have a way to diagnose it prior with confocal microscopy. But remember, with a more advanced lesion, you're talking about a really sizable excision. So I still like to get the biopsy, but in those cases, I'm going to get a pretty big wedge biopsy of that lesion. And with the early lesion, I'm getting the majority of that lesion with just a simple shape biopsy. So when it comes to basal cell or squamous cell, I am more comfortable doing an excision after I get a non-cutting diagnosis. But with melanoma, because first of all, we don't know if we're going to need a sentinel lymph node with the excision, and also the, you know, depending on the depth, what are the very large millimeters around the lesion, I don't excise at the time of diagnosis because the excisions can be pretty dramatic.
We have two more. Are rosettes specific to AKs? In other words, does a presence of rosettes argue against an SCC?
So you can have an SCC with rosettes, and I actually did show an example in the Skin of Color lecture. So it's not specific to only AK, but when you see them, you know it's not a melanoma. You know you're dealing with either a pigmented AK or an early squamous, which would be pigmented Bowens.
And then the last one, how often do you see a melanoma develop under a pigmented SK?
Huh, interesting. I don't think I've ever seen a melanoma develop under a pigmented SK, but I did show an example in the Skin of Color lecture of the AAD showing a case where it kind of looked like a pigmented SK, and it was, in fact, a nodular melanoma, so maybe it was something that developed under a pigmented SK. It's pretty rare to see melanoma developing within an existing lesion, but if I have seen it, and it's been very infrequent, it's been within a congenital nevus.
We have one more that came through. I've had a derm tell me that if there's a hair growing out of the mole, it's benign. Do you generally find that to be true?
So I definitely would not use that as a way to diagnose something as benign, because if something is really early, there may still be some preservation of architecture, but certainly for very advanced lesions, it's unlikely that it's going to preserve hair follicles, but the goal is to catch things as early as possible, so I don't know that I would use that as a cutoff. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. See everyone tonight.
My pleasure.